Opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And we are back here on Analyze This. I want to thank the Department of Labor for hooking us up with some great students from the LIFT program. And they made a great appearance here on Analyze This. The program is well on its way, having started on the 6th of June and picking up students along the way on the 13th and the 20th. And it's going to be running until Friday, August the 12th. Okay? So June 6th to Friday, August the 12th. Depending on when you started. Now we're going to shift to the topic of the day, you know, topic of the weekend for the most part. Of course, you know, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of, I believe it was Mississippi, it was Dobbs versus Mississippi. I'm going to find that out right now. But we brought in a guest who will be speaking specifically to our young people. We've decided that young people, you know, today's Young People Day, and hold on a second here, Dobbs. Make sure I get this right. Okay, Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health Organization, and this was a landmark decision of the United States Supreme Court in which the court held that the Constitution of the United States does not confer any right to abortion and overruled both Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. And those rulings came down on Friday, June 24th, 2022. And joining me now is Ms. Rina B. Patel. I hope I pronounced her name correctly. A parenting expert, guidance counselor, licensed educational psychologist, and board certified behavior analyst, author, and mother of three, and she joins us now from San Diego, California, with some advice on how to go about talking to your kids about abortion rights. Good morning, Ms. Patel.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Without a doubt. Is it Dr. Patel or?
Rina. It's Rina B. Patel.
Yes. Rina B. Patel. Okay, so no title in front of it, just Ms. Patel?
Yeah. Patel.
Okay, tell me the acronym LEP, that's Licensed Educational Psychologist? That's what that stands
yes.
for?
Yeah, so I'm a clinician. I'm a psychologist in private practice, but I also have a background in working with schools and education as an educational psychologist. And I'm also a behavior analyst, specializes in just working and understanding human behavior, why we do what we do.
Okay, good. Now, I know that, you know, you're talking to, you focus on, today's discussion is about talking to our children about abortion rights. But yes. Shouldn't we actually do a little background respect to abortion before we get into abortion rights? Do you think that would be the best way for this conversation to go?
I think, first of all, you have to do, I always tell parents, you know your children best, right? Mm-hmm. So you know what their understanding level is. And so this really specifically to preteens and teens, just make sure they understand what abortion is in general, but then also important to understand the history. We have to realize that a lot of all our children have been in school and in history books. And what are you learning about? We're learning about Roe versus Wade, or, you know, just Supreme Court and all of that. That you need to embed in your conversation as well.
Okay. Well, before we do that though, let's try to be as candid as possible. You know, young people, you know, your body develops, and at, you know, hormonal realities start kicking in your teenage years. Before we get to abortion rights and all that stuff, are we doing a good enough job from an educational standpoint with respect to sex ed? We need to get it back to where it starts from. How do we, what should be some some what where are the signs, the indicators that I believe my child is at the age where we could sit down at the table and we can talk about the realities of life?
Yeah, I think by age 10, everybody's bodies develop differently, as you said, and puberty kicks in. But definitely by the age of 10 is through the conversation of, sex ed and intimacy and puberty and learning about the female and male body. It is important to talk about that, sometimes women do become pregnant and it's unsafe, or they do not want to get pregnant, or something else happens. And again, you don't have to go into so much detail, depending, again, you know your child best. But if there is some rape or an abusive situation, but maybe something specifically wrong with their health or the health of the developing fetus, and use the medical terms. I always tell parents, don't be afraid to use the word abortion, to use the word, a fetus, embryo. Use the medical terms, because at the end of the day, they're also medical procedures. And that's what an abortion is, a medical procedure done by a specialist, by a doctor. And so the more matter of fact you are, the more science-based it is, the more it's part of that learning process.
Now, the original ruling, 1973, Roe v. Wade, it was considered to be settled law. And now we're finding out that politics has gotten to the point now where it's impacting Main Street and having an effect, and the disproportionate amount of ethnicities, because they've already determined that the people of color and people of lesser means are going to be impacted the most. With all due respect, it starts at home, right? Doesn't it? That conversation needs to be had at home, right? So we gotta be very straightforward with our children. We can't wait until after the crisis exists. We need to talk to them to, avert the crisis from happening, right?
Right. It's so hard because, I have an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old. And when they were younger, very early on, I talked about what consent is, having rights to your own body, having privacy and things like that. And now it's like, wait, these politicians, the government has rights over my body. And they're so accurate in their questioning. And I think it's important to, at a young age, we also talk about they don't owe anyone a physical touch, right? People have to ask you to touch you. And so we're trying to teach them at a young age about consent in their own body and their choice and their rights in that sense. And then yet it's so conflicting, right? As this outcome that came out Friday. So it is conflicting. I think, it's important to talk about reproductive rights. This has been in place for almost 50 years. And so it's, I think a lot of us as educators and parents and all of us are in shock.
Now, one of the pointers here, they said, is to listen to your child, listen to their thoughts, address their questions, help them understand what this could mean to their future and their children's future. Communication is absolutely critical. There are those who are in the business, in the parenting business, who have the belief, when I speak, nobody else is. My opinion is the only opinion that matters. With all due respect, isn't that somewhat played out in this day and age, where good parenting should also include processing what your children are telling you?
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely want to listen, validate, empathize. In this particular situation, children learn really quickly that life isn't fair, right? And so I think it's important to talk about what injustice is and how, for example, in this situation, know, people of color, people with lower incomes who don't have access to certain resources, rural communities. Cannot everyone gets access to equal health care, or they're more prone to health risks. And so use this time also as teachable moments, but definitely first listen to your child, listen to your teen, because oftentimes as parents, we wanna jump in and move past it. Not only do we wanna problem solve, but we wanna move past the uncomfortable feelings, emotions, difficult conversations. And it's important to sit with it, listen first, and repeat what they're saying to show that you are understanding and respect what they are sharing.
Okay, when you first heard back at me that the via the leaked draft that there was a possibility that Roe v. Wade would be overturned, what went through your mind as someone, you know, who works in this particular field?
Even if I'm as a professional, I still had the fear and anxiety set in. I was angry. I felt, oh, wow, you know, beyond just abortion rights, how can someone take my own right to choose something that is a private confidential conversation I want to have with my own physician? And then I started to think even beyond this, which is playing out in the media right now, is, you know, what about people who get IVF? What about people, you know, in other countries, if you miscarry, they look at it almost as a crime because they think it's intentional. So I started to play it out even more, thinking like, what about contraceptives? I work with a lot of teenagers who, you know, speak to me about, you know, challenges in their relationships, that they had to have abortions because they were it was a date rape, things like that. And I think I fear for this next generation. I mean, we as, you know, moms and our moms have more rights than they have right now.
You know, this one is reverberating. We're seeing protests. Protests started on Friday. Yesterday, this morning, I saw a photo of the protesting continuing yesterday. In front of the Supreme Court, you got the pro-abortionists versus the anti-abortionists, and we should respect everybody's opinion, right? Even those of the anti-abortionists, even if we disagree with it, you know, in full, there should be a level of respect, though.
Yes, there are opinions. These are their opinions amongst your own community, your own peers. And so you have to respect both sides. It needs to be reciprocal. But as a family, decide, is it, you know, say, you know, if a child comes up to you and says, your teen comes up to you and says, what do we believe, or this is my thought, what's your thought? Of course it's okay to share, and you can say, this family believes all people have the right to make decisions about their bodies or their lives, but it may be different for another family. And I think it's important to share, always share both sides, and talk about positive activism. When you think about social media, look at a lot of the teens, you know, feeds, their Instagram, their pages, they're talking about it. It's out there. And so you just want to make sure that they have accurate information and they have an opportunity, a platform to share in a positive and safe way their thoughts and opinions.
Now, you mentioned those extreme circumstances, rape, incest. You didn't mention incest. You know, yeah, I just mentioned that. The notion that a child who may have been sexually assaulted and impregnated in certain states must carry the pregnancy through its term, to me, it just sounds criminal on its face. In particular, when it's documented that they were violated. I'm of the belief that while the Supreme Court may have acted on Friday, this is a legal discussion that's going to continue for a long, long time.
Yes, and I think that's what's important to share with when speaking with your teens and young adults is that we're going to see this play out, and there are going to be these cases, 11, 12-year-olds who have allegedly, been raped by, let's say, their father, have to carry their sibling to term. What does that state? What does that mean? There's a lot of mental health, crises that will unfold with all of this, the trauma, as well as it'll just be interesting to see. I live in a state of California where, as a parent and professional, I feel just lucky, right, that I'm in this state. But I can't imagine what it feels like to be a parent in a state where, these rights have immediately have been taken away. So it will be interesting to see as things unfold. I'm thinking about someone who even has an ectopic pregnancy. I was just reading a story about a physician, a woman coming into the hospital, and physician on the phone with her attorney trying to figure out how to get this procedure done so she doesn't die, and she was bleeding. They had a matter of hours till they figured it out, but the doctor was too scared to lose his license. And so this just seems so unethical and so wrong on so many levels. I don't know, are we living in a third world country? Like, where are we?
Well, we're actually victims of a polarized nation, in particular at the leadership levels, and it's impacting us. It's not just on K Street in Washington D.C. and Wall Street, where the folks with money, the investment bankers, are investing in these companies that generate billions of dollars. Surrounding the medical profession. And it's impacting us. Now, you said you live in the state of Florida. Your governor, in California.
Yeah.
And your governor mentioned on Friday, abortion is legal in California. It will remain that way. Yeah. I just signed a bill that makes our state a safe haven for women across the nation. We will not cooperate with any states that attempt to prosecute women or doctors for receiving or providing reproductive care. And, he got 1 million likes with this. So fortunately, you're in a state in California where the ruling on Friday does not have immediate impact and won't have impact for a while, we hope.
Yes, I am. But it doesn't mean I'm still not really
sensitive.
And thinking about November coming up, right?
Well, he actually went on yesterday. And we're going to a break. He said yesterday, that was on Friday. Yesterday, he said extremist Republicans across the nation are trying to eliminate fundamental American freedoms. Time to fight back. Voters will now have the chance to amend the state's constitution to enshrine the right to choose. And he signed a new executive order that protects women coming to California, not just women who live there. So fortunately, you're in a state, the most populous state in the nation, where you have a governor who is of the business of, in the business of protecting women's rights. So we'll take a break. We'll be back with Ms. Reena B. Patel, guidance counselor and a licensed educational psychologist, board certified behavior analyst, joining us here and Analyze this morning. We'll be back right after this.
Evictions are a form of violence.
Tiana Caldwell lives in Kansas City.
After that eviction and after being displaced, it kind of follows you for the rest of your life. You're always trying to find a way out. We have to fix this with policy.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On Point is journalism that seeks solutions.
Weekdays at 10 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Good morning, neighbor. I see you got your bumper stickers and yard sign up early.
Yes, I'm so ready for this election season.
Me too. Just waiting for the info on the polling places and them ballots.
What polling places? You mean voting centers? The election system is using voting centers this year, where you can go anywhere across the island, walk in, fill out a ballot. Just bring your ID.
Really? Because my daughter lives in Tutu, but walk all the way by the airport and would try to run back home before the sun goes down to vote.
Nope. You're no longer stuck to just your neighborhood on election day. Voting centers mean you can vote anywhere in your district. And the next time, try the early voting option too. Skip the line altogether on election day.
Girl, you have all the good tips this year, man. So, who's going to win?
Ah, read me yard sign, then pick any voting center. Just remember, voting is not just your right.
It's the right thing to do.
A message from the election system of the Virgin Islands.
If it's happening around the world.
NPR's Frank Langfitt is in London covering this one. Hey, Frank.
Good morning.
Cuba is experiencing its biggest anti-government protests.
If it's happening here at home.
On a blistering hot day in Twin Falls, Idaho.
On the northeast border of Mississippi, where the river nourishes rich and green.
Morning Edition from NPR News will take you there, wherever the story is. Listen every weekday.
From 5 to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here on Analyze This, and we've got Ms. Rina B. Patel joining us from what's the name of that state?
California.
No. There's
San Diego,
a state.
California.
No. I know the city. No. There's a state. Every state has a nickname. What's the California nickname for the state?
A nickname.
Golden something. It's golden something.
Oh, the Golden State.
Yeah. Well, joining us from out in beautiful San Diego, California, one of my favorite cities on the mainland, by the way. And I'm looking forward to getting back there later this summer. What's it like? I know it's like after 6 a.m, so thanks a lot for waking up early and hooking me up.
No problem. It's nice. It's always beautiful, right? Very blessed to be able to be.
So you're in San Diego proper or one of the surrounding cities?
The suburbs around San Diego.
Okay. Yeah. I everybody knows me. I'm a horse racing guy, so I like to hang out at Del Mar. It's a beautiful track.
Yes.
Beautiful up there. I actually have a friend, a childhood friend of mine. She lives in Temecula, which is like an hour away, hour 15.
Yeah, about an hour away.
Up on Interstate, they take Interstate 15, work your way all the way down in San Diego. So, that's a beautiful part of the country. However, the news that we got on Friday was far from beautiful. And that has impacted not only real life impact with respect to the medical profession, but politics. And the governor has pretty much stated, like a lot of folks, that this is going to be a ballot box issue in November. So one of the things that I hang out on Twitter, I'm not big on Facebook, right? I do Twitter. And one of my friends on Twitter is saying, you know, all of this, you know, protesting and all that stuff, it won't mean much if we don't keep it at a fever pitch leading into when it really counts, which is election day. You think this one's going to resonate all the way through, or we're just going through the phases and right now we're just reacting?
No, I think it's going to resonate. I mean, we've already seen it in the polls. I think it's going to, you know, be something that individuals can definitely vote on. I mean, I know within our family, I have an 18-year-old who is excited to vote, and we're having conversations about, just about everything, but this included.
Well, it's going to be interesting because it is June and we are still going through the primary phase. And then, of course, we got the general election down in November. But at the end of the day, it's about sound decision making and educating yourself. Right. And knowing, you know, where you at, what you have available to you so that, you know, you can, you know, avert some of the extreme situations like the one the ones that I mentioned in some instances. You know, the male is just overpowering the female, and the female is defenseless. But the notion that you know, you're violated and You have no recourse but to drive across state lines to a state that allows for this activity. I believe it was Justice Kavanaugh who voted to overturn Roe v. Wade, as well as voting in favor of the Jacksons, and the Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health Organization case stated that there are states that allow for abortion. So this particular bill does not undermine interstate commerce, as if that is some consolation. That is no consolation. What they're doing is undermining settled law that has been on the books for 49 years, Ms. Patel.
Yes, absolutely. And then what about the fact that if they were to go to state lines, would still be a resident of their home state, and then they're still likely to get penalized, right? Even though they do go and get a safe abortion in a state that it is legal.
Well, you know, it's gonna be interesting to see, you know, how we go about addressing this. So you mentioned 10 years old, right? As a age of when you should consider speaking to your child about the realities of life as relates to reproductivity. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, you know, sadly, only 13 states have sex education in their classrooms, and so a lot of it is, and naturally comes from parents. Children are curious, and so it starts with explaining. You can explain at a younger age their body, again, very matter of fact. They start to want to have privacy when they go to the bathroom, but as they hit around age 10, some develop puberty a lot earlier, and I'm not talking just about females, males too. I think it's important. This whole outcome has affected males as well. So girls and boys should understand abortion rights. What does this mean? But talk about it in a developmentally appropriate way. You know your child. Check in with them, ask them what they know first before jumping in and trying to overshare information. But the goal is also to ease any anxiety they may have, answer questions. And as a parent, you may not know all the answers. You can do the research together. It's okay to say, I don't know that answer. Let me get back to you. And it's never a one and done conversation. You want to have the ability to have them come back to you in a safe, judgment-free area, or what I call safe zone of conversation.
Now, this particular ruling, it changed everything. Is there now increased, I don't want to say pressure, but responsibility on teachers in the education profession to keep an eye on certain activities taking place, given what we're talking about? The whole thing has changed. It's a whole new paradigm now where, we do have parents, unfortunately, male parents, who feel inclined to want to be dominant and take advantage of the children, who have wives who are intimidated by them, while they may be doing things to their girl children. This is far reaching, Ms. Patel.
Yes, I mean, you want to be vigilant as an educator, no matter what. Observing and looking for signs of abuse. So yes, if you feel or see, and there are those internal red flags, you still have to act upon it, right? And so it's. You have to be that mandated reporter no matter what.
So you're saying educators being vigilant actually comes with the job, but now we're looking at an increased level of vigilance for obvious reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as an educator, a teacher, you have students in your classroom for hours on end. You get to know the child. You observe certain behaviors. If you start to see a child pull away, you start to see a student who is acting just abnormal, out of the blue, grade slipping, difficulty eating, sleeping, I mean, that's even at home, you know something's wrong, and that's where you have to create that confidential space that they can share. And oftentimes teachers are develop great rapport with their students that they feel comfortable disclosing things that are also going on at home.
Now, we got indicators that this was going to happen, not just with the leaked draft back in May, but last year. You could recall that Texas law, right? There was a law in Texas that pretty much determined, you know, when the limitations with respect to when an abortion can be conducted, right? You familiar with that?
Right.
And there was a law professor from Washington and Lee University who asked this question. If a fetus is a person at 6 weeks pregnant, is that when child support starts? Is that also when you can't deport the mother because she's carrying a U.S. citizen? Can I insure a six-week fetus and collect if I miscarry? Just figuring if we're going there, we should go all in. And this is a law professor, Carlos Chapman, from Washington and Lee University. These are the questions now that are in play, right, Ms. Patel? Given how extreme the partisan justices on the Supreme Court have decided they are going to, you know, impose their will via the ruling, then the repercussions should be just as extreme, shouldn't it be?
Yes, and that's where it's going to open up even more. It's so ambiguous, but not even at conception. They're saying 6 weeks, so at immediate conception. But I'm thinking also, well, so what happens to, where we've been fighting for childcare and paid, you know, maternity leave. There's so many things that we've been pushing to get on the other end with children. What are they going to do about that now, knowing that women have to have carry to term? So it will open up even more questions, more discussion. And a lot of this is still very unclear.
Wow, this is far reaching. We have this particular medium. You know, we're in the business of wanting, you know, people to be as educated and as knowledgeable as possible, and to use their own, you know, analytical abilities to arrive at their own conclusions. We're just throwing out questions here so that, you know, the public could be aware of what we're dealing with. Now, here in the Virgin Islands, you know, we passed local laws subsequent to Roe v. Wade. So abortions are still legal here in the territory, but we're looking at approximately half the states in the union that will not be allowing for abortions, right?
Right. I mean, it's already in place. I mean, I'm in California, so I feel very fortunate for the people who live here. But again, I'm thinking about just certain demographics, people in other states. 33% of Black women unfortunately die when giving childbirth. So I'm thinking about communities of disparities. What can we do? Talk to your, not only, you know, write to your governor, if anyone's listening, write to your governor, get out there and vote. Start to just educate yourself and advocate.
The Equal Protection Amendment and the 14th Amendment, to me, is now on the table, right?
Yeah.
Because if something is allowed in one state but not allowed in another state, how am I equally protected?
Right.
I'm sorry, but the 14th Amendment is about equal protection. You know, if I live in the state of Missouri, which does not allow for abortions, whereas another state does, then there's something amiss. With respect, I know that people say, well, states can do what they want to do and all that, but equal protection should be equal protection, shouldn't it be?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we talk about the importance of equity, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, equal protection. I mean, you're going to know this more than I do, but when I'm thinking about the constitutional amendment rights of, is it 1, 4, the 9th, and 14? So I'm thinking about, wait, how all of a sudden do women have less rights than men? And then how is it that states have certain more rights than other states? And so
in the face of the 14th Amendment, which calls for equal protection, it doesn't make any sense. That's the ambiguity that is now very much in play. And to me, I know that, you know, we're dealing with the immediate effects of the Supreme Court's ruling 4 days ago. But like I stated earlier in the conversation, I think it's just started. I think interpretation is very much in play now, and you know the Constitution. You know, while they keep using the, I think it was Supreme Court Justice Alito was saying abortion is never mentioned in the Constitution. Equal protection is, so you know you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, you can't. I agree. My focus and what I can tell listeners out there is when you feel helpless and hopeless, put it into action. There's so much research on in the field of positive psychology. When you feel that you don't have control and you can't do anything, you actually can make change by engaging and just work towards something that is a cause that you believe in, whatever it is. And that's where you need to seek out and start small, start in your community. And oftentimes people say, well, I'm just one person. But imagine that one person who does something and then the next person does something. It becomes this domino effect. And that's how we can affect change. And that's where we need to go to the ballot boxes.
So it all boils down to education, what you're saying, Ms. Patel. It's all about education, right? At home, in schools, libraries, what have you. This is a real life exam that we're dealing with here, literally and figuratively.
Yes, absolutely. It'll be a little bit of trial and error. We're going to see what happens, mm-hmm. but educate, advocate. We don't have answers. And I think that's what increases fear and anxiety is that's what anxiety is, the fear of the unknown. And so we have to let certain things play out and see what happens. Let's watch this first case that comes through and see what really, really happens. If women get prosecuted for having abortions or using contraceptives, or, I mean, that's a whole nother question in itself too, that as a parent, I worry about for this next generation too, and a professional, is will they have access to contraceptives? Like what's going on now?
Yeah, well, that's something that the Attorney General mentioned, right? With respect to the Food and Drug Administration and certain medication that's available now that the Justice Department's of the belief that the Supreme Court ruling does not affect that. That is now a legal question. Things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're talking about IUDs and certain types of birth. So it is very scary. Certain states, it's already into effect. And if you read kind of a little bit more of the laws in these states, it really does... they have a lot of control. The government has a lot of control over the female body.
Yeah, well, without a doubt, we'll take our final break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the conversation with Ms. Rena Patel, a licensed educational psychologist and a board-certified behavior analyst and author, mother of three. And we're talking about the real-life impact from a parental perspective, the Supreme Court's ruling in the Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health Organization ruling on Friday. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome to Bank.
banking for your business. At Bank of St. Croix, we have many ways by which you can mind your business, including checking and savings accounts and merchant card services. And the mobile app and online banking provide access 24/7. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Galas Bay at 340-773-8500 and one in Peters Rest, 340-713-8500. Bank of St. Croix, bankofstcroix.com.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Morning Edition takes you across this country and around the world with stories that keep you informed and the context to understand what matters. The news comes at you quickly, but we slow it down to examine each story from different angles and give perspective on what might happen next. A brand new day comes with new possibilities and a new edition of Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekdays from 5 to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
And we're back here, and ladies, and we want to thank Ms. Raina Patel for joining us to speak a little bit about how we go forward in communicating with our children, because we got to protect them. You know, we've been going through a lot of unfortunate situations where our children are concerned. You know, we had the Uvalde massacre. In May, I believe it was. Yeah, it was in May. And either May or early June. I believe it was in the last part of May. And, you know, that was in May. That was definitely in May. Yeah, it was in, like the 22nd, 23rd, somewhere around there. And now, you know, we've got a situation as a result of our Supreme Court, you know, being overly political and over-legislating from the bench. You know, what was deemed settled law? Stare decisis. And I hope I pronounced it correctly this morning after I butchered it yesterday. That's what Attorney Duane Henry said, you know. So, you know, senators, you know, haven't been in that. That's one of the reasons why I was very uncomfortable over the years as a member of the legislature, speaking with nominees before their nomination hearings. You know, I rarely did that. If I did that, maybe 2-3 times, I did it a lot. Seriously. You know, I want my interaction with a nominee during the confirmation hearing, right, to be as pure as possible. In other words, I don't want to know that I had the ability to question you, you know, behind closed doors, and then, you know, then question you on the floor, on the record. That way we don't have any, you know, well, you said this to me when we were, you know, in conference, and now you're saying something different. I by not doing that, I eliminated that potential. That was just me. You know, some senators are very comfortable with that private meeting. Some nominees want to have that private meeting, you know, but I, you know, that was just my style. And to know that senators from, you know, those moderate states, like a Maine, Susan Collins, whose votes are, you know, looked at Lisa Murkowski out in Alaska, who, you know, they might be a Republican or a Democrat, but for the most part, you know, they have a, you know, a independent, a swing way about them. You know, they're not, you know, labeled in such a way. And to know that they were told and in many instances misled by a nominee during the confirmation process for a lifetime appointment, they really must feel violated. That trust was violated. And, you know, that's the problem with the Supreme Court. You know, it shouldn't be a lifetime appointment. It should be a term limited. You know, who are justices, you know, that they should have lifetime appointments when they have the ability to legislate from the bench? That is maybe the true question that we need to look at right now. Right? No more than 30 years or something to that effect, because you don't want a whole lot of turnover, you know, in the highest land of the court. But there has to be some check that creates a balance. And as it stands right now, the Supreme Court ain't got that. You know? And it's unfortunate. And ultimately, it's insulting that nominees can tell elected officials in the U.S. Senate whatever they want to tell them to get a vote. And then after they get their vote, they can do a 180, you know, reverse position and get away with it because they have a lifetime appointment. So that maybe is what we need to look at. If we're not going to, you know, modify the bench given population, then we got to do something, you know. The people need some level of recourse when Supreme Court justices and the highest court of the land violate trust. That's just a fact. I know there are those who believe that because they're justices and what have you, that, you know, they're off limits with respect to what we, you know, what we say about them, how we feel about them. Those days are over. Okay? The Supreme Court, as we speak today, based on the NPR article, the NPR poll, I believe confidence in the Supreme Court right now is at 39%. You in big trouble. NPR.org, Supreme Court confidence. I'm gonna pull up this story because I read it last night, right? Based on the poll, right? One day ago, there was a story on NPR, right? And when you have a Supreme Court, the highest court of the land, right? And here's what the article read. Just 39% said they have a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the Supreme Court. 58% said they have not very much or no confidence at all institution. That's a low in the poll, right? The poll also said, but few want to change the size of the court in the wake of the decision. Only a third of respondents say they were in favor of expanding the court. That's 33%. 54% said they oppose that move. 62% of Democrats said they are in favor of doing so, but 57% of independents, and nearly 9 in 10 Republicans were opposed. But when you have the interpretation branch of government, where 39%, right, say they have a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the Supreme Court, and 58%, which is 50% more than the 39%, say they have not very much or no confidence at all in the institution, you're in trouble. Because that's supposed to be the impartial branch of government. They're the ones that are supposed to make sure that the legislators don't overdo it when they pass in laws, and then the executive branch, you know, don't abuse the powers that come with executing pursuant to laws passed by the legislature. That's how important this third branch of government is. And now they're getting into the business of legislating from the bench. In effect, impacting economics. Could you imagine that Judge Kavanaugh, right? I'm going to pull up what Judge Kavanaugh, you know, wrote. I'm not going to quote him or paraphrase him. Justice Kavanaugh, I should say, not Judge. Justice Kavanaugh, interstate commerce as it relates to abortion. I'll make sure I get this one right. Right? So that I could, you see? Okay, here we go. Right? Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who emerged Friday as the Supreme Court's pivotal vote on abortion, said states outlawing the procedure may not bar residents from traveling to other states to terminate their pregnancies. Quote, may a state bar a resident of that state from traveling to another state to obtain an abortion? He wrote in a concurring opinion, in my view, the answer is no, based on the constitutional right to interstate travel. Kavanaugh also said he didn't believe a state could constitutionally impose liability or punishment for an abortion that took place before the court's ruling Friday. He said that practice would violate either the Constitution due process law or ex post facto clause, which bars retroactive punishment. This is supposed to be some consolation, Justice Kavanaugh? You gotta be kidding me. You ain't telling us nothing that we didn't know. This is weak. And more importantly, it flies in the face of what you told senators when you were up for confirmation in either 2017 or 2018, whenever that was. This is bad. You know? Settled law, man. Stare decisis. I learned something yesterday. I'm going to hold on to it forever. Since Attorney Henry taking shots at his boy, saying I butchering the language. You know what I'm saying? It's okay. He was right. You know, but I like the Latin. You know, I like it. I mentioned ab initio and, you know, res judicata, sua sponte, all those good terminologies that Ronnie Russell was educating us on before. And, you know, we'll continue to learn it, the Latin language used in the legal profession. It's beautiful and all that stuff. Okay? Now, let me shut that down. But, you know, ultimately, we're hoping that cooler heads will prevail, and we will, you know, continue to, you know, deal with the struggle, because the struggle is real. But, you know, we'll be better people at the end of the day. I'm going to wrap up the show with some of our COVID numbers. The mainland, right? The mainland got a little problem. I think it's the BA4 and the BA.5. BA.4 and BA.5 strains, because the mainland is now at 15% positivity rate, right? 108,215 cases on average over the last 14 days. You got to be concerned about that. Locally, we're doing okay. The most recent data drop that was made available yesterday had us at... what's the number? Okay, yeah. 20,828 positives and 416,597 negatives. So in total, let me just see what our overall positivity rate since the beginning of the pandemic is now. 20,828 divided into 437,425. 4.76% overall. So we're more than holding our own, okay? The most recent data drop from yesterday, right? Had us at 39 positives and 491 negatives. Okay, so we'll divide the 39 into 530. Okay, that's the total number of cases. 39 divided into 530. 7.35%. So it's up 1% from where we've been. We've been at 6.4%. Now we're at 7.4%. So we got to keep an eye on that, in particular on the St. Croix side. Okay, we have 135 actives on St. Croix, 36 on St. Thomas, and 2 on St. John. Okay, total actives in the territory right now, 173. Okay, and we have had 118 COVID-19 related deaths. And on the mainland, our hospitalizations are at 31,720. And of which 3,492 are in ICU, and average deaths are at 333 COVID-19 related deaths per day. Okay, so that's what we had. Yesterday was pretty somewhat neutral. Minor losses on Wall Street yesterday. The Dow was down 0.20%, a fifth of a percent. The Nasdaq was down 0.72%. S&P 500 was down 0.3%, 0.30. Russell 2000 was up 0.33% at plus 0.34%. So, we're heading into the dark days of the summer on the mainland. Keeping an eye on that weather system that's supposed to be south of us, heading into the Gulf. We'll get some more detail with that tomorrow. We should have the Department of Health should be joining us sometime soon, so we reach out to them. Maybe we might get them on Thursday, okay? And that's pretty much where we at. So great show today. Thanks a lot, Davina and Kevin Dixon, the Department of Labor, and the four beautiful students, Ashley Martinez, Kathy Platt, Jenna Canegada, and Michael Bell. Thank you, Ms. Rena Patel, for joining us to talk about what we're dealing with in the aftermath of the Supreme Court ruling on Friday. Thank you to my DJ for making today's show absolutely smooth, and Zoe Zimmet and everybody associated, Mountaintop everybody, and of course the great audience with the awesome text messages. Thank you, Santa Bonds. For be good, be safe, talk to you tomorrow. Bye bye.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
I'm Attorney General Denise George. How much do you know about Virgin Islands laws? Injustices can happen anywhere and in situations where we least expect. I make it my mission to empower you with knowledge about our laws and the issues that affect our Virgin Islands community. Join me on Justice Matters, a new talk show that aims to inform you and engage you to be a part of the solution.
Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Papa, why can't we telegraph while riding a horse?
Son, there ain't no one to blame but Jeffro. He was riding old Betsy the Stallion, tip-tapping away at his telegraph, when blam, ran right into the side of the saloon.
Well, if Jeffro can't do it, neither should you. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org.
A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.